Coming up on this episode, we're going to talk all about retirement planning, but how one issue specifically could sink your retirement. It doesn't take a whole lot when you're planning for retirement over the long term, and one issue could really wreck everything that you've worked towards. We'll explain that today, plus we'll have some Riverbank reactions coming up next. Welcome in. Glad to have you on the podcast today. I'm Ben George with Desmond Taylor, as always, from CLC Financial. Desmond, welcome in. How are you?
Good. Good. It's we're coming into February, coming into the, I guess, trucking along through this year, second month of the year, and your Christmas will be here before you know it.
I don't want to get too far ahead quite yet, but yeah, you're right. It moves pretty quickly, and you know, we're already hitting the spring here pretty soon, but I'm glad you're with us and glad you're watching today here, Riverbank Riches, Navigating Financial Wisdom. If you have any questions for us, we'd love to hear from you. You can always log on clcfinancial.com, or you can always call 910-323-5700. I know we're going to get into our main topic today, which is this overlooked issues that often happen with people and how they can ruin retirement. We also have some Riverbank reactions, Desmond, which we're going to introduce today, which is you actually going to, we're going to pull some, I guess, clips from, you know, social media that we've seen, you know, some short form video that have talked about different financial issues or opinions on stuff. I'm going to have you react to them. So I like the idea, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll explore it a little bit later on in the show.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, we'll jump into our main topic today, which is how one issue can sink your retirement. And if you think about, like, just picture retirement being a ship sailing towards the horizon. You got rest, relaxation up ahead, but all it takes is one little leak that could sink everything you've worked towards. So I want to spotlight some of these oversights that happen quite a bit in retirement and talk about how you can plug those holes and ensure that you have a safe and smooth sail into retirement. And the first one is the question that everybody has when they probably come into me with you, Desmond, is, do I have enough to retire and am I going to run out of money, right? So that possibility of outliving your money is one of the issues. If you overlook it, can obviously and quite clearly ruin everything you've worked for.
It depends on, you know, there's a couple of factors that go into it. You know, one, how much money do you have? How much money do you spend? Are you a spender? Are you a saver? But the possibility of outliving your money if you don't control it correctly is real, and it's there. You know, there's various different income sources that you're going to be drawing your funds from. They're going to be coming in from your different retirement accounts, you know, Social Security, if you have any pensions. So you could do, you know, some people could possibly have some guaranteed options, but you need to make sure that you're not exceeding those. And then, you know, inflation, which I think we're going to get to as well, is a huge factor. So there's things that are constantly eroding. And so whenever you get close to retirement, you just need to start making sure that you are, you know, budgeted appropriately. And I hate to use that word, but it's really just making sure that your expenses are under control. Most people aren't going to spend less in retirement than they do when they're working. We have many clients, there's data to show that. All you do when you're retired is you spend money. That's all you can do. You're not working. So you're traveling, maybe doing some volunteering, but then volunteering will turn into, you know, maybe money to get to the volunteer spots, or you're giving. So there's not a lot of ways to generate revenue in retirement unless you go back to work, which most people don't really want to do. So just making sure that your expenses are under control and your investments and your retirement savings and everything that you've worked hard for is allocated properly, so that you're not, being eat up by inflation or, you know, volatility, sequence of return risk. So there's a lot of ways to hedge against it, but just again, making sure that everything's appropriately allocated and you have a good retirement plan is important, because, you know, you don't want to be, you know, that person that's 85 years old that's having to pick up a part-time job because your retirement didn't go as planned. Now, if you're 85 and you just like working, that's a different story. We have plenty of those clients, but you want to make it optional. You don't want to make it forced.
Yeah, I know it's the number one fear probably for most people heading into retirement, but proper planning can kind of help remove a lot of that anxiety and ensure that you don't outlive your money. And you mentioned inflation. Mm-hmm. So that's the second one here. And it's probably not as overlooked now as it was maybe a few years ago, because that number has been just hammered in the headlines everywhere you look about, you know, 8% inflation just a year or two ago. And it's come back down a little bit, but it's clear that inflation is a big problem. So how do you work with people, Desmond, in order to come up with investment strategies to help them keep up with inflation and, you know, in an ideal world, beat inflation?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of different ways to, you know, first of all, if you're invested in the market, well, this is during your accumulation phase, you know, S&P funds, those are typically have always outperformed inflation if not short term, over the long term. Most investments at least keep pace with inflation. Now, it depends on when I say investments, I mean equities, because, you know, you can be in, unless you're in TIPS, which is, you know, inflationary protected bonds. You just have to be careful about the creep of it, because the bank is always going to try to pay you the least amount of interest possible to attract new money. Now, you know, banks always function off of the fact that they have to have deposits, or so much deposits for the amount of lending that they do, but they're not going to just try to go out and pay you the highest interest rate possible. So, you know, making sure that your investments are put away appropriately and allocating, you know, you can still get safe funds that are maybe not beating inflation. You know, and I say that because you look at last year and you could get, you know, money markets, you could get CDs, you could get some savings accounts that were earning, you know, 5%, but inflation was 8%. So you're, instead of just being completely destroyed by inflation, you know, you're at the end of the year, you've only lost 3% instead of, you know, being creamed by 8 or 9% by having it in an account that's, you know, earning you 0.01%. So that's really where you have to look long-term and look and say, okay, you know, these funds that I'm going to put out into, you know, we have in clients' brokerage accounts, you know, those are really what we're looking at 10-year horizons. And that's what's going to keep pace with inflation. The money that they need and that's liquid and that they have to live off of, we're trying to get the best rate possible. But it, in some years, you know, there is the understanding that, okay, inflation could tear into that. And so that's why it's so important to have everything diversified, not only. And you hear diversification a lot on the different types of investments and making sure that you're diversified against, you know, all different sectors, but account diversification is just as important. And that's making sure that, you know, your spread, your accounts are in certain buckets for, you know, short-term needs, medium-term needs, long-term needs, and also that you have everything that is going to be coming up accounted for as well. You know, maybe you want to pay for a child's wedding. Maybe you want to pay for college. Maybe there's some medical expenses coming up. And you don't want to pull off your brokerage accounts if it's, you know, if it's down to pay for those things. And certainly inflation can eat into it too. So it's just making sure that everything is put away in the right place and there is emergency funds that you have in case you need them. But inflation can be nasty, and that's why the feds are so trying to get it under control at, you know, almost any cost. I mean, you know, Powell outpays Volcker. And Paul Volcker was the person that, besides Powell, that has raised interest rates the most out of any other Fed chair. And it's just because, you know, it's true. Inflation can destroy economies. And, you know, you look at what's going on in Turkey. And so you really have, they really have to get it under control, but it really can hurt and that's because it hurts the, you know, middle class, the consumers so much, because the dollars that they have in the bank are just being eroded away. So that's where you have to, you know, have your emergency funds put somewhere, knowing that, you know, those, by putting it somewhere safe, you know that you're guaranteed a loss. You have to put it there. So you have to have an appropriate portion put away in some equities or in some funds that are going to outpace inflation.
Yeah, you know that this is going to happen. You know, inflation's going to be here, whether it's high or low. It's been low for a little while until this recent spike, but we know it's going to be there and it's going to erode our purchasing power. So some things you can do to take care of that. Again, if you have questions, we'd love to hear from you. 910-323-5700. Now, another issue that can be overlooked pretty easily is the expense of nursing home care. Not everybody wants to think about it. Not everybody thinks it will apply to them. And it's often easy to put it off as well. But nursing home is expensive, and this long-term care needs to be addressed in planning.
Long-term care will devastate a retirement plan. And I tell my clients this is long-term care single-handedly will destroy a retirement plan. And it's just because it can be so incredibly expensive. And planning for it can be very challenging too, because you think of, and I'm not a proponent of long-term care insurance. I mean, it has its pros and cons. In my opinion, it's got more cons than it does pros, far, far more cons than it does pros. But, you know, I'm sure that there's some people out there that could try to make an argument. I'd love to hear it. But, you know, long-term care insurance can cost you around $10,000 a month per person. So you're looking at, you know, I'm sorry, $10,000 a year per person. So you're looking at $20,000 per couple. And I mean, there, of course, there can be differences, but it's, I'm using an average here. So you think of using or having it for 10 years, you know, you've just spent $200,000. Let's say you never went into long-term care. Well, that money's gone. It's like term insurance, right? I mean, or Netflix and Netflix subscription at that. You know, all of those are kind of related. You know, you end it after 10 years and that money, I mean, it's just gone. You might as well just throw it out the window. If you go into long-term care, I mean, it can, you know, it can be a lifesaver. So planning for it can be challenging because it can be so incredibly expensive. But there is a lot of different tools to plan against it. You know, putting a portion of money aside, you know, there's different types of long-term care vehicles or long-term care products, you know, specific products that have long-term care clauses in them, that have riders on them. You know, one of the things that we can talk about is living benefits on life insurance. You can do trust and wills, you know, with attorneys. You can talk to attorneys about how to set those up where, you know, it avoids the 5-year look back period with the state. You can put things in your children's name. But I think most people, because, you know, I think over 70% of people over the age of 65 experience some type of long-term care. So most of the time, somebody knows somebody, if it was a relative, if it was their parent, that went into some type of long-term care. A lot of people use the, you know, giving the house to the kids with lifetime right. They use that for long-term care. But that at the end of the day doesn't actually pay for your long-term care. Essentially, what you're doing is making sure the state doesn't go and take the assets and you get to leave it to somebody. But you're not really paying for your long-term care. You're still put away in a facility that's probably not ideal, probably not the one that you want. And you know, most people would like to have long-term care at home. So, you know, making sure that you have a plan, and there are a ton of options out there for people that can create a good, credible strategy for long-term care. It's just addressing it early and putting away an appropriate amount so it doesn't devastate your retirement plan if you don't go into long-term care, and it doesn't devastate your retirement plan if you do go into long-term care. So I would say most people have income from Social Security. You know, that won't stop. Most people may have some type of retirement income that they're getting from their investment accounts. That won't stop. You just don't want to go and dip into those above what you have been or the plan is. So that's where you can put a portion aside into, you know, some type of life insurance with living benefits. There's different types of, you know, products out there, long-term care annuities. Long-term care annuities essentially are similar to a life insurance policy in the fact that they go through underwriting. But, you know, you say you take a long-term care annuity, you put, you know, $50,000 aside or $100,000 aside, it pays you a guaranteed interest rate. And if you don't go into long-term care in 10 years, it gives you all the money back. If you do go into long-term care, it multiplies the benefit by 2 or 3 times. And if you pass any time between there, the death benefit or the full amount goes to your beneficiaries or your children or whoever you name as your beneficiaries entirely. So those are incredible products to use. It's kind of like a savings account for 10 years. Like I said, if you haven't gone into long-term care, you can cash it out. You get what you put in plus the interest, or you can leave it in there and still get the long-term care benefit. And, you know, those just alone beat the heck out of a long-term care policy. So there's several different ways to do it. It's just what's best. And we use, you know, we'll use trust, we'll use life insurance, we'll use annuities, we'll use various different, you know, just putting money aside, making sure that it's in an account that, you know, has some growth on it to hedge against long-term care. So there's several different options. I'm not really big on any one of them. I'm just big on what's the best fit for the client. I don't do long-term care insurance, though. Again, open to for argument if somebody can prove me wrong on it. But Ben, I just have not seen you know, those long-term care insurance policies, not seen good results. I'm very unimpressed with them. So, but hedging against it's very important.
Yeah, if you want to learn more about the different options and just kind of see what might be the best fit for you, again, you can reach out to Desmond and CLC, because there are a lot of different tools, there are a lot of different paths you can take, but the bottom line is you need to address long-term care before it's too late. All right, the volatility of the stock market. Desmond, we know that it's up and down. Now, if you hit the stock market in some down years, especially some big drops right around the beginning of retirement or into retirement, it can be a big issue. So how do you go about preparing someone and their investment strategies to make sure that you kind of limit or at least mitigate some of the volatility that's in the stock market?
When you are in your accumulation phase, volatility typically isn't that bad as long as it's trending upward. Now, of course, you don't want to be in volatility. That's bad. Now, there's a risk versus reward, you know, and that's really the risk versus reward is how much risk are you willing to take for what amount of return, basically quantifying the amount of return versus the amount of risk. And in an ideal situation, you can get the least amount of risk for the most amount of return, right? But in your accumulation phase, the volatility doesn't really matter too much. I mean, you know, you go and you look back at, you know, 2008 and people, 2007, 2008, 2009, a lot of volatility. I mean, essentially the market just, you know, dropped 40% there. And you look at people's investment accounts and people will always say, you know, well, I lost money in 2008. You know, I just haven't got back into the stock market since. Well, look at your account if you haven't pulled any money out from 2008 until now. I mean, the returns are just astronomical. You know, you far exceeded whatever the peak was prior to 2008. As long as, you know, I'm assuming that I'm looking at the S&P 500 here, which is kind of the benchmark for what most people use when they're talking about their retirement accounts. So, you know, volatility in the accumulation phase, not really that bad. Really, when you're accumulating and putting money into your 401k, if the market goes down, you know, that's great. You know, you're getting those stocks, you're getting those target date funds, you're getting them on sale. So when the market goes back up, your return, you know, you've bought in at a lower price. You know, buy low, sell high is what it is preached on Wall Street all the time. Don't know how achievable it is, but it's ideal situation. But volatility during your distribution phase of retirement, or, you know, after you have retired, is really not a good thing, because most people will try to look at an average return like the S&P 500, or they'll look at these higher or the indexes with more volatility, and they'll benchmark those against, you know, where their retirement accounts are positioned. But you got to remember, you're really not trying to achieve the highest rate of return in retirement. You're trying to achieve a nominal rate of return that will sustain your retirement. You know, most people don't need 10, 11, 12% in retirement to sustain their retirement. If they do need that, then they need to be more realistic, because, you know, over 10 years, you make it average that. But, you know, some years you look like happened in 22, you're down 30%. Okay, well, what if you're pulling 10 or 12% from your retirement account that year? Well, you were just down 40% that year. Boom, half your assets, you know, almost half of them gone. So you really want to achieve a less volatile account. Now, your lows won't be as low, your highs won't be as high. But, you know, you take, for example, and you say, okay, if I have $1 million in my account, it drops 50%, I'm at 500,000, right? Well, now, what if it goes back up 50%? Well, 50% of 500,000 is 250,000. So started out with $1 million, drop 50%, 500,000, go back up 50%, you're at 750,000. Well, if I was in an account where it didn't drop and I just earned 5%, in other words, you look at your buddy and he's like, man, I'm up 50% this year, or I'm up 30% this year. Okay, well, what did it do last year? Because if you're up only 5 or 6%, but it didn't drop at all, well, you're sitting at, you know, a million 60,000 or so, and he's sitting at, you know, 750 or 800,000, you know, at best. So it's really important to maintain and try to minimize volatility in retirement, because then you get into sequence of return risk. And when you start pulling funds out of your retirement and you're in the distribution phase, it's the game changes from the accumulation phase. You're now introducing a artificial negative rate, or a rate of return that is negative every year, because you are pulling from those accounts. You know, when you go into that year, your account, assuming it's at zero, is already starting from a negative balance, because you're taking money out of that account to retire. So whatever the market does, you need to go ahead and say, you know, have in their mind that I am taking this because I am retired. I am taking X amount of dollars out. And so I'm going into this year with negative returns. And again, you're in retirement, that's okay. You know, you want to retire, you've worked your whole life, you put that money away so you can retire, but don't go into it with negative returns and then go, you know, risk on and try to achieve 30%. And then you're in a situation where, yeah, I mean, you're going to have to go back to work, because you just, you know, essentially went and gambled your retirement to try to get an extra 4%. I mean, and that's really what we're talking about here, is you're really going to take a 30 to 40% hit. So you could have went and got 3 or 4% more on your retirement account. So you really need to think about that risk versus reward when you're entering into retirement. And that's where we shift things for our clients, is you're not in the accumulation phase anymore. In the accumulation phase, risk on, right? You want to be able to achieve the highest rate of return. You have time to recoup if there's a down in the market. But in the distribution phase, it's just the fact of the matter is you don't have that anymore. So, you know, being realistic and saying, you know, okay, I need to reallocate and reposition my assets accordingly. It's not a bad thing. You're in a different phase of your life and you need to adjust accordingly because of it.
Yeah, that scale, that balance of risk reward shifts, you know, throughout your life and into retirement. And you have to be addressing that and making changes on your end as well to keep up with that. And Desmond did a good job of explaining that there. All right, one more issue that can get overlooked for retirement are rising taxes, right? We got to talk taxes before we get out of here. So discuss the impact then for us, Desmond. What can the tax increase mean on retirement? And then how do you go about positioning someone to have the most tax efficient plan possible?
Man, you know, it's like you look and you say, how can't taxes change? Because taxes is, you know, it's not how can they change. It's like, what can they do not to change them? Because most tax laws have a predetermined date that they're just going to revert back to old tax law. Any tax cuts, like the one, you know, the one that was implemented with the previous administration, it has an expiration date. That's the only way it ever got through Congress, right? It's got a sunset date on it. Now, a lot of people like to bring up, you know, well, we were in the highest tax rates, you know, back in we had up to a 90% bracket. So we're in relatively low tax rates when you look at the average and all, you know, but you really have to start looking at the income thresholds then and, you know, because taxes, our debt is increasing. So how are taxes also going to decrease? You know, you can't, in other words, you can't have $34 trillion in debt as a country and then just have, you know, 0%. Now, there are ways that, you know, cutting taxes can stimulate the economy. We've seen that before, how, you know, cutting corporate tax rates, cutting individual tax rates that stimulate the economy. But, you know, most of the debt that is owed is to ourselves. A lot of people think that the U.S. owes a lot of debt to other countries, China. I mean, that's true. We do owe some. But look at where most of the debt is owed to, and it's ourselves. Whenever the government is borrowing money, they're borrowing it out of social programs. You know, Social Security is something that they dip into all the time. Social Security in itself is sustainable, but there's a lot of programs that dip into Social Security because they realize that Social Security was sustainable. They're, you know, saying, hey, look, this was making money. Let's use it's in excess, or it has a positive cash flow over what we need. And they go, okay, well, let's dip into that in order to fund this, you know, program over here. Taxes are ever changing. I don't see taxes, you know, one of the things that we talk about is hedging against taxes. If taxes decrease, great. I will, you know, for my own self and for all of my clients, when there's tax cuts, it's wonderful. But you want to plan for the worst. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, taxes, there's already situational taxes that are just going to impact you in retirement, right? And when I say situational taxes, what happens when there's two spouses filing jointly and then one of you pass away? Okay, well, now you just went from married filing jointly to individual. And so your tax brackets or your taxes automatically increase. And there was no tax law change. There was no, you know, Congress didn't change anything. Nobody pushed anything through. It was just the fact of the matter is you went from married filing jointly to now filing individually. And that's something that you have to plan for in retirement. Now, there's various different ways that tax laws can change without directly, you know, without them directly changing the tax, the ordinary income brackets. They can adjust the RMDs. They do that frequently. You know, it used to be the RMDs used to be at a lot lower age than they are now. Now it's 75 years old when you have to start taking RMDs, and people will think, you know, oh, well, that's great. I don't have to take RMDs until later. Well, the IRS calculates the amount of RMDs that you take based off of the uniform lifetime table. And as you get older, the uniform lifetime table, the percentage you have to take out of your RMDs goes up as well. And so that means you have to take more money out of your retirement accounts, which means you pay more taxes. So, you know, making sure that you're hedged against future tax increases is always important. Again, it's something, you know, where we want to say we hope that taxes decrease. We hope that the taxes go down. But we don't want to be stuck in a situation where we're betting on them to decrease, because that can turn out, you know, like I said, with the situational, you're guaranteed that, I would say in most circumstances, somebody's going to pass away first, and then you're just bumped up to an individual filer. So making sure that you have appropriate accounts, again, a back to account diversification, making sure that you have appropriate accounts, Roth accounts, you know, not saying that you can't have any traditional or IRA accounts where there's RMDs you need money to draw off of in order to live, but making sure that you have some Roth accounts, you know, looking and reviewing your life insurance, because the life insurance is something that will replace those accounts, replenish when one of you passes. So seeing if you have any life insurance and reviewing the investment accounts and different types of account types is really, really important, because the taxes, you know, the U.S. tax code, again, is something like 50,000 pages. I may be even undershooting, it may be 150,000, but it's the longest tax code. It's the longest tax code in the United States or in the world. It's important to understand the tax code, and there's a great opportunity when you do understand it. And just sitting there and just leaving your accounts alone and not hedging against a future tax increase is just, you know, in my opinion, just a way of just giving the IRS more money, which I don't think anybody really wants to do.
Nope, we sure don't. So make sure you're planning for taxes and the possibility of going up and positioning yourself now. Taking actions sooner than later will put you in a better position down the road in retirement. All right, again, if you have questions about anything we discussed today, always you can get in touch with Desmond at clcfinancial.com. We're all about the business, what they can do. They've been around for 50 years now, Desmond, half a century. Yep. You guys have been around.
50 years this year, yeah.
Very good. I know there'll be some celebrations this year and some things we'll be doing to recognize that. And so stay tuned for that as well. But the phone number, if you want to give them a call, 910-323-5700. All right, we're introducing a new segment here called Riverbank Reactions. Desmond, quickly tell us what you want to get out of this segment here.
You know, I'm Gen Z, Ben, so really, it just seems fitting.
It does seem fitting. We'll try to get some reactions from clips around the internet that we find that are financial related, obviously, right? Try to provide a little clarity and a little explanation and try to sort out what's maybe misinformation versus what's accurate. So here's our first clip.
Until she lost her job, Kathleen Coleman had spent nearly 30 years working as an executive assistant on Wall Street. She doesn't have much to show for it.
Tell me about your 401k.
Does this answer the question?
This is what it was in 2005. 2007, you're down below 2005.
Right. And another one went down almost $40,000. One was 80, 88,000, and then it went down to like 50.
How old are you?
54, and I live alone. I don't have any children. I've been a career girl all my life, and it's been a great career, and I don't deserve this. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
You know, of course, they're trying to get viewership, and it's the media, and they're trying to get attention, and everybody's, you know, oh my God, and they're, you know, everybody's mad at the corporations because of what happened, and, you know, rightfully so. There was a lot of wrongdoing and a lot of things that definitely could have prevented this. But, you know, you just look back at where 2008, you know, fast forward to 2018, if you didn't touch it, you know, assuming she was in like an S&P 500 fund, then she would have turned out okay. And then also overlay a, you know, target date fund. If she was going to, you know, if she was 54, she'd have a target date fund of probably, you know, 2018 or so, what the performance of that was like for like a Vanguard or Fidelity target date fund. Either one of those, she should come back positive than where she was before. So this is just where you want to make sure that now if she was 5 years away from retirement, now we have an issue. Right. Because chances of 2008, I think it just started to come back 5 years later. 10 years out, it's terrible. It's not detrimental. And you're looking, historically speaking, you know, you're probably going to be okay. Now, this is when the risk tolerance that we do for our clients and retirement priorities, that sheet starts to become very important. Because I'm sitting here and I can talk about the data and we can go back and we can do back testing and we can look at all of those things. And, you know, number wise, you would have come out on top. However, if this is her reaction to that in the market, then her expectations entering into the type of fund that she was in was not appropriately explained to her. You know, when you are in a S&P fund, and this is where we just talked about, is this can happen. In retirement, when you're taking distributions, you do not want this to happen. In the accumulation phase, again, you know, if she had the opportunity to buy anything during that year, then, you know, she could have went in and she would have not only come out on top if she just left her money in, but if she could have taken everything and just dumped into the market at that time, she would have been come out not only ahead of where she was, but way ahead. But it's the amount of risk that she's willing to take, the amount of risk that she can take are two different things. And so that's where it's important for whoever explained the 401k, which hopefully there was somebody there, hopefully there was an advisor, hopefully somebody was explaining what she was actually getting into. Now, of course, this is an ideal situation, but that's where setting expectations up front about the type of vehicle that you're getting into is very important. So there's a lot to be said on that, but there's also a lot, you know, going forward, you know, now we're coming up on, you know, 16 years later or something from this, that make sure getting close to retirement, this doesn't happen. And that's what we plan for. However, if you're 10 years out and this happens, we suggest you come and talk to somebody when you hit right at 10 years out. So, but if she would have walked in the office and showed it, we would have likely told her to hold fast. And then, you know, when we get about 5 years out, let's do a review on it. And then at that time, you know, will likely have shifted her assets into something a lot safer, knowing that she's going to retire pretty soon.
Securities and advisory services offered through Creative One Securities, LLC, member FINRA SIPC, a registered investment advisor. CLC Financial Services, LLC, and Creative One Securities, LLC are not affiliated. Medicare products are not offered through Creative One Securities, LLC. They may be purchased through a licensed insurance professional. We are an independent financial services firm helping individuals create retirement strategies using a variety of investment and insurance products to custom suit their needs and objectives. This material has been prepared for informational and educational purposes only. It is not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for accounting, legal, tax, or investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Insurance and annuity products are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuing insurance company. We are not affiliated with any government agency. Diversification does not ensure a profit or guarantee against losses.